Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Now, before we get to it, if you were a part of our recent fall membership campaign, thank you so much. We heard from a lot of renewing members as well as new friends, and you can give anytime, not just during the drives. We did fall short of our recent goal for the campaign, so if you were meaning to give but weren't able to get to it, or if you'd like to just step forward now with a pledge of financial support, just go to kvcrnews.org/support. Then you're just a few clicks away from being a listening, contributing member. Now on KVC Arts, a couple of months ago, we touched on Knott's Landing with Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Donna Mills. Tonight, we are returning to Knott's Landing and beyond in conversation with actor, singer, producer, and director Michelle Lee, who played Karen Cooper Fairgate McKenzie and was nominated for a 1982 Emmy Award and won the Soap Opera Digest Award for Best Actress in 1988, 1991, and 1992. We heard a small portion of this on a recent edition of Lifestyles. Now the full conversation. Once again, going back to Knott's Landing. KVCR's Lillian Vasquez has more.
I'm so excited to spend some time with you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I had the wonderful opportunity to interview your friend and colleague, Donna Mills, and one of the questions I asked her was about her name, Donna Jean Miller. So I want to ask you the same thing. Your full name was Michelle Lee Dusick, right?
Correct. I was Michelle Lee Dusick, and I started to sing with a band on the weekends. My name kept changing then. It was Shelley Shores, Michelle Reeves. Then I thought, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm Michelle Dusick. So auditioned for a show, a small theater called the Ibar Theater. And it was actually the first audition that I had ever done. Anyway, my mother was with me. I was 17 years old, started rehearsals, and they called me outside where the marquee was. The fellow doing the marquee said, okay, we need your name now. You got to decide. My name was Michelle Lee, middle name, Dusick. And my mother turned to me and said, oh, just drop the Dusick. So I became Michelle Lee. You know, those were the days when if you had any kind of a name that was not Hollywood or movie star sounding or too ethnic or whatever, you changed it. You know, you had to be Rock Hudson. His name was Roy something. You can't be a Roy and be a leading man. So Michelle became Michelle Lee, and now everybody thinks it was Michelle Leibowitz.
Oh, because you're Jewish.
Yeah.
Do you think celebrities change their name as often now as they did then?
Absolutely not. I think we've grown, and you know, we keep growing, hopefully, as we see in our world today. Change has come. And I think that at a certain point of time, actors felt very comfortable using whatever their name was and never thought about, oh, they're going to think I'm too this or too that.
Were you the type of kid that performed on cue, meaning like when your parents had friends over or family over and they said, Michelle, sing a song or do something? Were you that kid that was ready to perform?
Yes. See, my father would say, we've got company now, Michelle, so... maybe, you know, you shouldn't entertain tonight. And I'd look at him and I'd say, okay, here I go. I just did it. Actually, my parents were very, very supportive of my career, always.
Let me just say, your father was in show business as well as a makeup artist. Did he teach you any tricks with makeup when you were growing up?
Yes, he did. And that might have changed also with science being brought into the makeup industry. He always said to me, forget about those creams and the whatever they're trying to sell you. You know, Vaseline is as good as whatever. That was, you know, don't fall for everything. But of course, now every woman in America is looking for a lift here, a puncture there, a take off my skin. Give it to someone else, please. But, you know, I think that also jumping right along, as I usually do, women have gone too far. You know, they walk around so often, and when the lips became very popular, big, succulent, fat lips, and everybody started doing it. And my friend said to me, you know, it's so funny. It's like the emperor's new clothes. It's like they all walk around looking ridiculous because some of them are done well.
Right.
Before I get in trouble. But most people, the bigger, the better. And it's like, what were you thinking?
Exactly, like, yeah.
You know how ridiculous you look. Like, we always play games with time and how we look and getting older and what is good for me now. Do I allow myself to just go wherever I go, get as old as I get? Or do I continue to do whatever I can to look younger / better? Mm. You know, there's people who were born with such, you know, it comes from background, like Donna Mills.
Yes, great genes.
Forget it. I've got big genes.
So do I.
I look at her and, you know, sometimes my left arm comes up with my nails out, ready to scratch any part of her face off.
When she said to me, I have some of the costumes that I wore in the 70s and I put them on, I said, they still fit? Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They do.
Yeah.
They still fit her. Mine has gotten, well, you know, there was a time in my 20s where I was a little round. And then there was a time when I first got into Knots Landing and filming, I was smoking. I was very thin because, you know, you just pick up a cigarette and you don't eat that little whatever it is. Mm. And then I quit. And, you know, one habit brings another one. And so I started to go to the food station. It's not called that.
Oh, catering cart. Yeah.
Yes, hello, the catering wagon. Or if you were working on set, they'd set it up on set. And we'd always find Miss Lee running over for a little something, just so she could get through the next 15 minutes. Yeah, and then, you know, so you saw me go up and down a little bit.
Let me ask, you started your professional career just out of high school, as you mentioned. You've been performing ever since. Was the stage your first stop professionally? And I know that you early on did How to Succeed in Business with Robert Morse.
Right. My first audition was for theater. When I was 17, I had my first audition and got my first off Broadway show in Los Angeles. Now, that show eventually went to Broadway. It only lasted 8 nights. It was called Vintage 60. And then I did one other show before How to Succeed, and it was also on Broadway. It was a musical called Bravo Giovanni. So that lasted a little longer. How to Succeed was next, and I got a phone call from the man who was producing one of my Los Angeles little theater musicals. And he said, hi, do you want to go on stage again on Broadway? Because it's grueling to do. Of course, I was so young.
Right.
They asked me today, I'd say, how long do I have to be on the stage for? But then it was like, I did have Succeed. I was in the original company on Broadway. But I wasn't the original Rosemary. What happened was, shortly after they opened, the girl that was playing Rosemary found she was pregnant and had to leave the show.
Oh.
So I came in right in the beginning of the show. And people thought, you know, I was the original. So in a way, I was.
Yeah.
I was in that show for 2 years and 2 months and fell in love with Bobby Morse, with Robert Morse, who's genius. That was an experience. I learned so much because I hadn't had much acting training. I was innately funny, but being innately funny doesn't have anything to do with comedy necessarily. And so when I did the show, I watched Robert Morse from the wings. His timing was impeccable. There would be no one who would beat his genius, who could possibly. I would watch him and try to pick up whatever, and he kind of took me under his wing a little, and every once in a while he called me into his dressing room during intermission, and he'd give me a little lesson, like, you know, when you say the red robin is Bob Bobbin. If you take a beat before you say Bobbin, you're going to get a laugh. The next day, I would do the Red Robin Keeps on a Bob Bob Bobbing. Mm. Ha, 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 so funny. I would get a laugh. He would teach me.
Our guest is singer, producer, director, and actress Michelle Lee. Over the years, you starred next to some big names in the industry, including Robert Morris, which you eventually made the movie with him, and then Dick Van Dyke and Dean Jones in The Love Bug, which is where I first met you on the screen, was The Love Bug.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you must be terribly young.
I am terribly young. No, I'm not. I thought Dean Jones was so cute, and you made such a beautiful couple there. How was working in the film for, you know, the three of those guys?
I will say, The Love Bug, the first one, was the highest grossing motion picture of the year it came out.
Wow.
It might have been 70, something like that. And the crazy person was Hackett, Buddy Hackett. And, of course, he was always funny. I mean, funny, but a great gentleman at the same time. Likewise for Dean Jones, by the way. It was a happy set, a very happy set. And because it was Disney, I had heard about this. Before we shot, every morning, everybody would sit around in a circle, and there would be a meditation and maybe some words of us and the world. It was a bigger, more beautiful note to the day. And, of course, the horrible thing was jumping right to the opposite. Driving to work one day, it was the day that Martin Luther King was shot.
Oh.
And also Bobby Kennedy,
right.
The same, while I was shooting that movie.
Mm.
And I'm sure this is going to make everybody have so much fun in this listening audience.
But it is real. I mean, it did happen, and it was going on. And The Love Bug, as you just indicated, was one of the highest grossing movies that year. I was a child, but life around us was happening too. I'm wondering if the set on the comic with Dick Van Dyke was a little different.
God bless Dick Van Dyke. I worked with him very often. I worked with him in Variety also. He had specials. I was on a few of those and some of the Variety shows that we'd sing and dance and do whatever. But the comic, you really saw another side of Dick if
right.
you didn't know him at all. Very quiet. And there's always a sense that if you want to talk to him, I don't mean me necessarily, is that he's very, there's the sense that he's going to give you so much. It's always light and beautiful and loving. But, you know, you can't get behind that certain part of him that's very, extremely private.
Mm.
Dick Van Dyke isn't one that cracking the jokes. And he lets other people do that. He's quiet.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, he is. It seems like he wouldn't be. But and he smiles people around him, smiling, great. But there's still the Dick that's a serious person. I was at his wedding reception, that his much younger wife.
Right.
She's a makeup artist. They met each other while he was working. You would think, oh, come on, another guy who's so handsome and whatever. He's going for this young girl. Wow. It happened again. And then you meet her. And she is the most incredible human being.
Oh, nice.
Just very positive and wonderful. And when I talk about two lovebirds to this very day, he's 90, you see nothing but love between these two people. I mean, the real stuff, you know, it's real.
How nice.
And just marvelous.
Well, I want to talk about smile. You know, Dick Van Dyke has that big smile that you saw on Mary Poppins and other things, but you have an infectious smile. When I look back at so many things, whether projects you were working on, you're always laughing or smiling a lot.
That's true.
Do you just enjoy life? Are you enjoying what you're doing? You're always smiling.
Sometimes people who are always smiling are people who are hiding something. And there are people who have to please. There are people who love to laugh. Now, I'm mentioning different kinds of people who are always smiling and have a great smile. And it could be many different ways, and maybe all of them relates to who I am and who I have been.
Hmm.
I do love people. I love people. The only time that I feel a little anxious is, as a celebrity I'm speaking, is when someone is agog when they see me, and they whisper and they look away and they look back. I want to just hide, put me in a closet, don't let them look at me. But if someone comes up to me and just talks, oh, I get into a whole, I'll tell them the story of my life. All you have to do is sound like you want to talk and you're intelligent and you're not falling over dead backwards to meet this person. Can I touch you? No, you cannot. Funny times. Sometimes, you know, especially in Knots Landing, when people feel that if there's a part of people, especially with my character, Karen, who is everybody's friend, sometimes people feel that they really do know you.
Right.
And they can get a little bit too chummy.
Right.
Here's one example. I wanted to kill this guy. I'm in a restaurant. There's a party that I'm at a table, like someone's birthday, and it's on one side of the restaurant. And as I'm walking to that seat, this guy sitting at the table says, come here, I want to take some pictures of you. My mom, hey, mom, stand up. And he's pulling me to the table.
Oh.
I mean, that is the worst thing that you could do. It's just not right.
And it's so assuming, and it's so invasive of your privacy as well.
Yes.
We know you're a celebrity. We see you on TV and on the big screen or on the stage. But I would hope that we, as the commoner, could smile at you and wave our hand and move along and let you do your thing as well. And if you're willing to take a picture, all the better.
It's KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Michelle Lee, known mainly for her work on Knots Landing. I'm David Fleming. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. Find many past KVCR's programs via podcast through iTunes, Spotify, NPR One, and Google Play. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Let's go back now to KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Michelle Lee, known best for her role in Knots Landing. And that is what we'll hear about next. It wasn't easy for Lillian to not jump right in with this.
So I have to say, I've held off long enough to not talk about Knots Landing, but I'm ready now. And, you know, I shared with Donna when I was getting my second degree in college, I attended night school, and I would schedule my Thursday classes to be over by 8 o'clock so I could get home and watch my favorite nighttime soap, which was Knots Landing. And, you know, I always thought that it was the most realistic of the nighttime soaps until later in the series, but you, of course, played the focal point and the mainstay of the series, Karen Farragate, later on Mackenzie, and you were the Pollyanna of the series, and I liked that you were the Pollyanna of the series.
Yes, you wanted things to be the way they used to. You know, I used to say there was a time that I remember when I was living at home. We all had our back doors open because, you know, the next door neighbor would come knocking, go, hi, I have a pie. I'm coming in. I'm in your kitchen. You know.
Yeah, right. Like,
we had the freedom to do that kind of thing. And, of course, when we started Knots Landing, the back door, which was off the kitchen in Karen's house, was unlike, supposedly, because Val, my best friend, Valine, would come over and she'd just show up in my kitchen. Karen, I'm here. Sit down, have a cup of coffee. That's the way life was. And during that period of time in our lives, things started to change. And I remember the first thing that happened was there was a little girl who was on her front lawn, and someone kidnapped her from her front lawn. I mean, something you never thought of. Because as a society, mom could do that, look out her kitchen window, start to be blamed.
Right.
And you're with the boy next door, and you're laughing on the grass and whatever. You're not away from the house. You're there. This girl got kidnapped. And all of a sudden, there were people stealing cars. And there were, this is one of my speeches, my Pollyanna speech. You couldn't send cash in the mail. I remember we could do that. You put cash in and you, you know, wrap the paper around it and send it. Now you couldn't do any of those things. We had to alarm our houses. People put fences around their houses and gates around their houses and locked their cars. And it was Karen, and they call it the Pollyanna speech, that brought it up, I think, at a time where nobody had really voiced it, but it was right in the beginning of this happening in our country. And because I spoke it, what they called the Pollyanna speech, people remembered it. they talk about it all the time to me. The Pollyanna speech was saying exactly what I just shared with you.
Right.
I want to go back in time where we didn't have to lock our houses. We didn't have to lock our cars. Hmm. Why in the world are we living like this anymore? She wanted to just scream. The person in the scene with her says, why are you such a Pollyanna? And she said, I want to be a Pollyanna. I want the world to be the way the world was. I'm not a Pollyanna. I want to be a Pollyanna. And that was the scene.
Yeah, I remember it. You were delivering the lines to the character Gary Ewing, Ted Shackelford.
Yes.
It was quite powerful. I think that if acting students and they're looking to do a monologue or something powerful, that Pollyanna speech has it.
Yeah.
Let me ask about some of the actors. Who were some of the actors that you really enjoyed doing scenes with, or any special guests that appeared on the series that you were happy to have them on the show?
First of all, Alec Baldwin was on our show, a big star today.
He was horrible. I didn't like him. He was mean.
He was strange. Yeah, he got a little bit off on the right side and fell. Was on the show for, you probably know better than me how many seasons.
I think he was about maybe four.
And we loved him. He was so talented. We had really...
Well, like Julie Harris.
Oh, well, Julie Harris was a staple. There's no one like her. There was no one like her. She was the most gentle, intelligent woman. Never spoke a bad word about anybody ever. Get me so crazy. Just come on. Just say anything bad about anybody. I dare you. But, of course, Joan Van Ark played her daughter. Julie played her mom. But we were best friends, Joan Van Ark and I, on the show, Val and Karen. And we would love the Val and Karen scenes because it was always serious on one level. Her character was always in trouble.
I know.
Okay? And then there was a real connection that the audience had for girlfriends. We were the girlfriends, and you knew you trusted us as girlfriends, and you knew that we would never let each other down. You know, it was wonderful. Of course, I'm going to go on to a few of the people. I mean, come on. To this very day, Donna Mills, Joan Van Ark, and I are still friends.
Nice.
And we still see each other. Mac, my husband, was also in a relationship with me that, I mean, we played that like to the hilt. That was what was so fun about Kevin Dobson, because not only is he a straight actor, we just would laugh. We would have so much fun. Our characters, we know men and women. We know husbands and wives. And we started acting as if we were husband and wife. And I mean that really. Because he protected me all the time on the set from whatever, from outside, was doing anything that he didn't like or swearing or whatever. You don't talk that way in front of a lady. And I should have told him, this lady talks like that.
You know, I remember when Kevin Dobson came, Don Murray had left the series after the first or second season, I don't know. And he came and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like him with Karen. And then you just did, you know, you just did.
Yeah.
And it just complimented each other.
Thank God, because people loved me with Sid.
Yeah, Don Murray.
Don Murray. I mean, they loved us. And when he died, it was like, oh, God, now what's going to happen?
And I couldn't believe the main character was going to die so early in the series.
You're right about Kevin. When Kevin, it took a little bit. First, you didn't know, you know, the man was, he's a policeman, he's a lawyer. I'm going to get the guy no matter what.
He was a hard ass.
That hard ass. Then you see this sweet, soft, romantic, funny, loving, sincere, trustworthy man come out. And we just had the best. When I say the sense of humor, so many of our scenes had this light touch that that's what I loved in the show. I really did. As you said, that this show was one of the most realistic nighttime soap operas. I like to think of it as a drama, a continuing story drama, until the last X amount of years when it became more soapy than any soap. Really went right into the sun.
Right into the sun. You know, I want to talk about, you also directed some of the Knots Landing episodes. How was that for the first time for you?
I did direct many of the Knots episodes. And before that, I had directed some small theater, not Broadway. When I did it, I had a lot of schooling that had taken place before I did it. But, you know, someone has to have a certain kind of stamina and eye and understand what, more importantly, the story is. What is this writer trying to say? Why is this episode so important? There's got to be a message that's hidden under all of this to make it more meaningful and more important. So I had an eye for the writer, producer, and they understood that the thing that worked so well is they understood that I did the story and that the actors were pieces of the puzzle that is being built piece by piece and put together. They understood that I did know what I was doing. Subsequent to that, you know, I directed other things, some theater, and I was the first woman to produce, direct, co-write, I like to say, because I did have a partner, and act in a television movie.
Color Me Perfect?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, you've got notes in front of you. What can I say?
No, I did my homework. I wanted to make
you
sure. Because
certainly did. Yeah, and they trusted me. You know, that's the thing, that because of my work on other things I had done, but not a lot of film, television, that, and they knew how responsible I was. And on Knots, the producers knew how responsible. I knew what I was doing. I did it as fast as I possibly could without leaving the sense of the creative. It got to the point where people were saying, I know when it's a show you've directed, which made my day.
Yeah.
But that's why Lifetime allowed me to do the movie and understood that I could take care of the dollars and cents of it as well as tell the story. So it worked out really well.
The series ran for 14 years and you were there the entire time. Why did you decide to stay all 14 years, and what was it like when it ended for you in May 1993?
Well, I decided to stay. Honestly, I've only said this in the last maybe year or two. I really didn't like doing the show the last couple of years of the show. Mm. I loved the producer. I was very close to Michael Feilerman, executive producer, until he passed away. We were like best friends. Mm. And David
Jacob.
We still see him. He's very special to me in my life. So one of the reasons I stayed was not just for Karen. I really didn't want to lose her somehow. I felt she was being lost in the fuzzy last years, but I stayed. And then ultimately, the reason I stayed was I wanted to say I did every single episode. There wasn't one episode I wasn't in. Even at the end, when they were asking actors to step out of 3-4 episodes because they couldn't afford the show anymore, the salaries had gotten so high. I said, I don't care if you put me in one suit, but I'm going to be in every single show and you can pay me whatever you think.
Wow.
And that's what I did.
And when it ended, how was that for you?
Very difficult.
I bet.
Karen had become so much a part of me. And I always say this one. It was like, where does Michelle end and Karen begin and vice versa? Mm. Because so much of my own personality was in the character. And of course, you know, after you talk to certain people or actors or the producer, where they producers, writers start writing for the actor playing a role because that particular actor is bringing something, their own special something to that character. So after it's figured out by the people who are on the other side of the camera, they start utilizing that kind of talent. So when I say Karen was Michelle and vice versa, it's true. They started writing for what I was bringing to it. And David Jacobs, who was the executive producer and creator, he would always write great Karen speeches. In fact, he did write the
Pollyanna.
It was brilliant. Yeah. The question is, yes, I had a difficult time. I went right into a depression. I was like, wait a minute, where am I? My car wants to go to the left and straight to MGM or wherever we were shooting Sony at that time. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow. Although I will say, one of the reasons I was able to do so many things and produce so many movies is because of the fact that I was doing Knots Landing. So I was more busy when I wasn't in a scene or off time. I was more busy then, and I created a lot of my work that I did and utilized the magic of what Knox Landing was for myself for a long time.
Right, because the show was so big and so popular at one time, you had more power, in essence, in the community,
yes,
in the industry, to do some of the projects,
yes,
you wanted to do.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I did projects that normally they wouldn't have done in terms of what is selling on television today. The movie that I did, Dottie West, Big Dreams, Broken Hearts, the Dottie West story, was almost a musical. There was so much music in it with a full orchestra, with most of the people Dottie West had worked with and her backup singers and these incredible costumes, but a lot of music. And I ended up recording all the songs, and I have an album of that movie, of me singing all the Dottie West things. And when I put it in the movie, it's hard to explain. You'd have to go out and buy it or see it again.
I've seen it.
Oh, okay. You know what I mean about music. I used the music in such a way that it was so apropos to the scenes, and you never knew the music was ending. It just flowed, and it ended, and you almost didn't know that it ended. It was just planned that way. And I think I was able to do it because I was so musical to start with. So I worked on that aspect of the movie for a long time before we ever started shooting.
That's actress, director, and more Michelle Lee in conversation with KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Let's go back now to KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Michelle Lee. Known best for her role in Knott's Landing, we'll hear about some stage work just ahead and some recent and hopefully future appearances in Palm Springs with some of her other Knott's Landing co-stars.
You know, I was going to ask you, you've done a lot of projects over the years. Was there some that were more special than others, or that you wish you wouldn't have done, or that you're glad you did them? And I was thinking about the Dottie West story and Color Me Perfect when I had that question in mind.
Yeah, they're very important to me. And also, I did a musical on Broadway called Seesaw, which was the adaptation of Tooth of the Seesaw, which was a straight play with Anne Bancroft and Henry Fonda.
Wow.
And then they made a movie out of it, a comedy with no music. Shirley MacLaine did the movie of Seesaw,
right,
for the Seesaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it with Ken Howard, and Tommy Toon was introduced in the show and played my best friend in it, and it was the first gay character that had a major role in a Broadway play. They never had before that someone who had played an integral part of the story. And Tommy Toon's character, my friend David, was a gay man. And it was perfect because I was like a gay man also. We hooted and howled, and I loved that. That was my favorite ever.
Huh.
That play was incredible. Incredible.
I want to switch gears here for a minute. You married at a young age. You were 22, and you married a handsome actor by the name of James Ferrantino. You also
Correct.
Have a son, David Ferrantino. Had it been
Correct.
His mom change or affect your career decisions?
Well, during most of the time I was in Knott's Landing, and what I would do is every time there was carpooling, I tried to do one a week. All the women, I girls, that's to me, we're all girls.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I mean no disrespect. My girlfriend would say, okay, you know, when would you like to carpool? I would do, you know, I have off on Wednesday. But that's good when you're doing a show like Knott's because you have days off.
Oh, nice.
You're not working every day. You might work one day and do four scenes because they're all in the Fairgate house.
Right.
My house, right? Maybe there's four scenes. There's two in the bedroom. There's one in the kitchen, one in the living room. Shoot it in one day, and now you're through the whole, you're very heavy in the show, and I have the rest of the time off. I would do that sometimes. If things were important, like going to the White House, I was on the Kennedy Center Honors
Oh, right.
Committee. And so, yeah, in order, I still am. And in order to go, I would always have to have at least Monday off, but I'd ask for Friday and Monday off. And if you do things in advance when you're doing a show like this, they write it on their calendar, and they know that they have to write around you for those days. They have to map out when and where you're going to work so that you could have time off. And I always did. So that's the answer, really, for my son, because I was mommy that had many days not working. Mm. And mommy who went to PTA meetings and school days or whatever. I was always doing that.
Wow.
And he still hated me, so no matter what I did. No, I'm kidding, but not. You know, I was a single mommy with a male child. It's like, don't you tell me what to do. By the way, my son and I are extremely close.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Very, very close. In fact, he called me yesterday, the day before. He said, Mom, because of what we're going through with the virus.
Right.
He said, Mom, for your birthday, okay, which is coming up, as you said.
Right.
I'm going to come over, and I'm cooking you a birthday dinner. So he's very thoughtful. Love him. We're very close.
Oh.
And that's the life of Miss Michelle Lee.
You played a role on Broadway in 2015 where you performed in one of my favorite shows, which is Wicked, as Madame Morrible.
Yes.
How was that?
I've got to tell you, never in my life did I think I would play a character like this. Of course, she was wicked.
Yeah.
She was Madame Morrible. So if you change one of those letters, it's Madame
Horrible.
Madame Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Such talented people in that show. And, of course, it's going on forever.
Yeah, I've seen
so
it.
So I was in it for almost a year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of endurance. And it's a good show. I've seen it about 7 times. And I love it every time.
Oh, my gosh. And you miss me.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. Michelle.
And you look so different. You know, the wigs and the makeup accentuated to God knows where. You don't really, people don't recognize you.
Well, your name is pretty big. I think they would have recognized that. What advice would you give to your younger self looking back? Or did you do it and play everything the way you wanted?
Oh, no. I immediately think of playing my career as one. I would have done it differently. I would have chosen differently. I was kind of all over the place, not making sharp decisions about what to do and when. For instance, when I started on Broadway and after Seesaw, it was mostly hand her the keys to the city and make her stay. I was basically that. I was a Broadway, no question about it, baby. And then I left it, you know, instead of staying on Broadway, where I think I probably would have or should have. My career took another left turn. It kept making turns all over the place. And that's why it's good and bad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's why you could say producer and singer and director and whatever. It's like a woman of all trades. My father was like that, too. And I feel that I think most of what I was thinking was I have to do everything one time. You know, it's like I've got to do this and I'm going to do it, whatever it happened to be. But if I wanted to take a right turn and go another way, it works and doesn't work. It doesn't work because you don't stay in one place too long. But it does work because by wearing all these different hats, your career goes on much longer.
Exactly, exactly. My guest is actress Michelle Lee. Michelle, I know I have to let you go, but I want to ask you 2 more questions if I can. You have your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Do you remember that day, or how was that day for you?
Oh, I remember that day. I do, mostly because, I mean, there were other people there, and wonderful people in the business were there. But Donna Mills and Joan Van Ark got up and sang something that they actually wrote themselves.
Really?
Cannot even begin to tell you what it was, but I was shocked beyond belief that they would even sing. Oh, they got up there, they didn't care, they just did it.
Oh.
So, yeah, everybody from Knott's was there, which is sweet. Again, you know, showing you that kind of support.
So I'm going to ask you, do you remember when you were a guest on the Joan Rivers show And the other guest was Lucille Ball.
Uh-huh.
You were so full of excitement and storytelling. And she was kind of, I love Lucille Ball, don't get me wrong. I loved I Love Lucy. I love the whole thing. But she's kind of grumpy.
Yeah. I think at one point, too, and I'd known her for a long time and a very good friend. Of course, Lucy's not here anymore. But
right.
Lucy Arnaz is one of my best friends. And so I remember that. Yeah, she was. I think the first lady was on the show at the same time was coming or whatever.
Yes.
But anyway, my organization, which was the Entertainment Industries Council, the first lady was being honored by this group of people. And Lucy was on the, you know, when they put you on the supported by list or, you know, one of the main people who are the president, co-president, whatever of the affair.
Right.
She was on the committee. She didn't know it.
I know. I know it. You kind of sprung it on her and she's, you know.
She went, yeah. I mean, this is her voice, right? Yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean?
That sounds just like her.
What?
What do you want to do now? What's next on your plate looking forward?
Oh, I think now I'll take a nap. I'm serious. No, you know, I don't know. I really, truly don't know. There's been a lot of offers. One, not a done deal offer, but one actually about a week ago for a movie and for Joan and Donna and me. I mean, it became a big thing because we celebrated our, pardon the expression, 40th. Anniversary of Knots Landing this year. And so we were all over the place. People were, the three girls, they wanted us. And now they want to do a movie. There was interest in doing a series at one point. But you got to find something that's very special for three old women.
Right.
I mean, I am fooling and not foolish.
Like, yeah, and you want it to be right for you and all three of your talents and your different talents. And so I know that Donna mentioned that you guys had gone to Palm Springs and done that talk over at the, I can't think of the Oscars maybe. And I'm like, I wish I would have been in the audience. So she says, well, we might do it again in London. I said, that's a little far for me to travel, but if you get together, please let me know.
Yeah, they've been asking us to come there. We had film, each of us, aside from our Knots Landing, we talked about mostly Knots Landing, with questions from
the audience.
People in the audience. And I got to tell you, some of it was so funny and so risque.
Oh, nice.
And just, and then talking about the wonderful things that we've been able to do outside of Knots. And it was great. We loved it. We loved it.
You know, Tyne Daly once referred to you as a great old broad. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, how did she hear that one? I know she did, but where did you hear it?
Where did I hear it? I think I watched it on Lifetime Portrait of Your Life.
Oh, yes, that's where I heard it. That's true. Yes, that is that. Oh, I actually, when I was talking about directing, it was actually Tyne Daly who played Nancy in the musical Oliver that I directed.
Oh.
And, yeah, I did that with her. And everybody was saying, she can't sing. What are you talking about? I said, you don't understand this. This woman is an actress. And however or whatever and however she sings, it's going to hit you between the eyes. And certainly we know that Tyne Daly now has done one after the other musical performances that we've all loved because it does. In fact, her Gypsy on Broadway was the best Gypsy that I had seen. And the reason is it's not because she has the greatest voice and there's such incredible songs and the soliloquy at the end and everything, but I so believed that woman playing this role that it didn't matter that she did not have the best musical voice.
Right.
I cried, actually, in the audience. I felt her pain, and I cried for the first time seeing that, for the first time. Tyne, you owe me so much goddamn money.
How did you feel about referring to her as a great old broad? Do you take that as a compliment, or where do you...
Oh, compliment. Definitely.
Yeah.
Don't I seem like a great old broad?
You
right
do to
now?
Me. Absolutely do. Michelle Lee, thank you so much for your time. It's been an honor to speak with you. And I do hope I get to see you, Joan, and Donna sometime doing a Q&A.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for all the time you've given me. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay.
All the best.
Okay, great.
It's been KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with actress, dancer, director, and singer Michelle Lee for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts. Thanks again to Michelle Lee, and here at KVCR, Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Sharina Wadd. KVC Arts programs are available as podcasts through iTunes, Spotify, NPR One, and Google Play, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Thanks again for being a part of our recent fall membership campaign. Thank you so much. Having fallen short of our goal, however, it is worth pointing out that you can give any time, especially now. Just go to kvcrnews.org/support, then it's just a few clicks away. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts are composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.